Welcome back to the Adam Schefter Podcast. It's Combine Week, and to get you ready for Combine Week, we will be joined by the new head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Mike McDaniel, somebody that I've known for a long time. Our relationship dates back quite a ways, and I remember him as the ball boy for the Denver Broncos team that I used to cover for the Rocky Mountain News and Denver Post. We go back and look at his career path from there to here to now being in charge of an NFL franchise. And then we'll be joined by the former general manager of the Minnesota Vikings, Rick Spielman, who now is appearing on a series of podcasts, doing some media work, and getting used to his new life in Florida, away from Minnesota. He'll share his thoughts on some of his Minnesota memories. And of course, in Combine Week, much of the talk will be about quarterbacks, as it always is. And before we get to Mike McDaniel and Rick Spielman, first wanted to point out some quarterback chatter that's gone on at the Combine already this week. Isn't it interesting that the Packers general manager, Brian Gutekunst, has said that he has had no conversations with no other teams regarding a trade for Aaron Rodgers? And for those who say, well, that must mean he's going back to Green Bay, being that there's been no trade talks, I would also tell you this. There are people in the organization, players, coaches, others, that haven't had any contact with Aaron Rodgers, that have no idea what he's going to do. And so while I think some people across the league think that he's more likely to return to Green Bay than not, I can tell you that the people in and around that organization right now are wondering themselves. They do not know what's going to happen. And in fact, one source who's semi-familiar with the situation described to me over the weekend that he thought it was 50-50, whether Rodgers would return or go back to Green Bay. We'll see whether or not he's right. But I can tell you there's a lot of mystery surrounding Aaron Rodgers. There's been no trade talks, according to the Packers general manager, with any other team. And I know people have said he's talked about a contract with the Green Bay Packers. I think Aaron Rodgers has thought through contracts and what they would look like on other teams as well. So we'll wait to see what Aaron Rodgers' decision is while we wait on the other quarterbacks like Deshaun Watson. And at the Combine, the Texans general manager, Nick Caserio, said, quote unquote, we're day to day in terms of handling that. So once the information becomes more relevant or prevalent, then we'll handle it accordingly. My philosophy from the beginning has always been to do the right thing by the Houston Texans. And I think the right thing for the Texans right now and the right thing for Deshaun Watson is to trade him. Now, the legal situation hangs over this, and my understanding is we could get some clarity in the next month or so, but I do believe that Deshaun Watson will be traded this offseason. He will be sent to another team. We'll see how that unfolds. We saw the unusual contract request from Kyler Murray's agent, Eric Burkhart, this week on social media, asking the Cardinals to pay him. And I've had a couple of people since then describe that situation as what they perceive to be a threat. Pay me or watch me play baseball. There are people out there who think that that could happen, that Kyler Murray once was a top pick in baseball, still has a chance to play 10 to 12 years in Major League Baseball. He could be an all-star center fielder in the eyes of some. And so by putting out the pay me threat now, they believe that he is just setting it up that if he's not paid, that he can go play baseball if that's what he wants. Now, we'll see whether that's right, but that thought came to me, that idea came to me from two different people this week after the social media post from Eric Burkhart about Kyler wanting a new contract. So that'll be something to watch, whether Kyler gets paid or whether he has any interest in going to play baseball. Then the 49ers quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo is going to soon have shoulder surgery. Now, by the time you hear this, he may already have had shoulder surgery that's going to knock him out until right before the July 4th holiday. Now, my understanding is there is still quote unquote significant interest in trading for Jimmy Garoppolo. I had said last week that it was not a lock that he would be traded, but I do think he will be ultimately. I think there's too much interest, a shortage of quarterbacks. I think the 49ers need the cap space and will get enough back for him that I do think Jimmy Garoppolo will be traded in the next month, despite the fact that he is undergoing shoulder surgery and will be sidelined for months. Now, once the team trades for him, he can go work with that organization, watch how they run their offense, work with their medical staff to try to come back sooner. But I do think that we're looking at a Garoppolo trade here, despite the surgery, in the next month. And the last quarterback that I think people wonder about, Russell Wilson, Seahawks quarterback. Now, at this time last year, his agent, Mark Rogers, had spelled out four teams that Russell would have welcomed a trade to. There really has not been, so far, much Russell Wilson trade talk. That doesn't mean that other teams haven't inquired. I think they have. I think more will. But Seattle has been very hesitant to trade Russell. I would think it will continue to be hesitant to trade Russell. And then even if the Seahawks could agree on a price with another team for Russell Wilson, let's keep in mind that he's got a no trade clause. So he could veto a trade to any team that he didn't want to go to. But as it is, if he remains in Seattle, I mean, there's a real chance that the Seahawks are going to be a last place team in that division right now. 49ers seem to be pretty good. The Rams are the defending Super Bowl champs. Cardinals made the playoffs last year. The Seahawks are always competitive. So it's hard to just say that they might be the last place team, but Russell Wilson obviously would be facing a tough situation in that division. Don't know that it will change his stance on being open to a trade anywhere else, but that would be another quarterback to track here, though Seattle has shown no inclination so far to date, as we tape this on Monday, midday, to trade Russell Wilson. And so that leaves us moving on to the combine. And that leaves us moving on to this week's guest, the former 49ers offensive coordinator, Mike McDaniel, who essentially has followed around Kyle Shanahan, has been with him in various places like Cleveland, Atlanta, San Francisco, now has a team all his own. He has been hired as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. And selfishly, personally, for me, it's been fun to watch Mike McDaniel grow from former Denver Broncos ball boy into the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Well, look who it is. If it isn't Mike McDaniel, how are we doing, my friend?
Good. We got clouds in the background.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
But there are no clouds in your life these days. I mean, no clouds, Mike.
That's the misnomer. There's clouds every day and you embrace the clouds.
I thought it was just blue skies, Mike.
No, it's all about the perspective. You need the clouds to enjoy the sunshine.
Oh, that's very, I like that. I like that's very deep and very meaningful.
It's more surface level and it kind of it fell into deep possibly.
How are we doing? All right.
Great. I'm humbled and honored that you're going to spend your time. I don't know. Are you in a basement?
No, I'm in my office, my home office. Yeah, you like I could give you a little tour if you want.
Is that your picking of wallpaper?
Actually, you know, the wallpaper was up well before I even made this like my little ESPN office. My wife put it up. And she thinks it's dated and it needs to be kind of overhauled. And maybe we'll do that at some point in time. But you and her sound like you're on the same page.
Hey, I didn't mean to bring up a sore subject. It was observation for observation's sake, if you will.
You know, one of my friends right before you called, one of my college buddies just called me. He said, hey, you're still doing a renovation in your house? And I said, if you knew my wife, you could call me 30 years from now and we would be doing a renovation then because we're always doing something to the house. Or let me be more accurate. She's always doing something.
Yeah, no. Well, she's always trying to get better. You either get better or you get worse.
So she's always trying to get better.
Yeah.
But sometimes it makes my life worse, Mike. That's sort of how it goes.
Luckily she doesn't listen to your show, right?
No, I don't think she does. But maybe somebody will bring it to her attention. So I haven't had the chance to officially in person congratulate you on becoming a head coach.
Well, thank you.
Outstanding.
No, we've known each other for a long time, and it's a cool thing to hear you say, and so I appreciate that.
You know, I was thinking about this, how many great people we were around in your childhood when you looked like this back in the day. Have you seen this picture?
Oh, yeah.
It's been brought to your attention.
It has.
That's how I remember Mike McDaniel, the double hoop earrings. You know, you look like a child actor, you know, a guy that's going to go to rave parties.
Nice.
Really, right? All that stuff, right? Like, I didn't know that guy was going to go on to Yale and become the successful assistant coach and wind up as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins?
Well, I'm not sure if that guy knew much about the future, hence the hoop earrings that were probably $15 at a local Claire's.
What would that guy have said if I had walked over to you back in the day when we were in Greeley, Colorado, in Dove Valley, and said to you, Mike, one day you will wind up as a head coach in the NFL with the Miami Dolphins? What would have been your reaction back then?
Back then?
Yeah.
The hoop earrings kid would have said, yeah, I know. He didn't know how, you know, he was all ambition, no reality at that point. You know, there's he probably would have thought it would have happened faster, but that was the pump up, you know, that my mom gave me growing up, and I thought I was invincible, and luckily life gave me some humility with real experiences that I bet, you know, he hadn't left Colorado yet. Freshman year of college was an eye-opening experience. I definitely, you know, looking back on it, I think I thought I was the man as a junior or senior, and then quickly found out I was not the man as a freshman at Yale, and I had a lot to learn. So, that he probably wouldn't have batted an eye. Whatever that means.
Well, what was it about your freshman year at Yale that made you realize you weren't the man, or that you had a long way to go, or that gave you a dose of reality back as a freshman at Yale?
Well, I mean, that was a wild experience in it of itself. because I just, you know, I wasn't very cultured. You know, the Northeast by itself was a whole another layer, and you're talking about a lot of well-rounded, talented, hardworking people from all over the country, and like I hadn't seen much. I didn't know really what prep schools were. Mm-hmm. That was a humbling experience when, you know, I was a freshman, or being a freshman in college, you're away from home. You're like, hey, you know, I would like attention from girls. And then I didn't have a double collared pop collar up, which was the thing then. And I was very confused and didn't know. And no one really paid any attention to me. You know, when you're in high school and you get into Yale, you get used to that big attention grab that you get, and you're a big deal. And then when you're one of the masses, and on top of that, there's nothing to write home about. It was pretty valuable. It made you, and then you don't have any people that you could, that you grew up with, you know, there's a lot of different styles going on, kind of made you find yourself. That whole experience, I think is very valuable, because it wasn't fun my freshman year. But it really, it changed me for, that's what I mean. That picture that you just showed was right before I went to college, and I was very different a year later. You know, figuring out, okay, what, I used to wear just Sean John, have hoop earrings. And I was a kid maybe going some places, and then you go in some place, and then you get to college, you're just one of many, and you're like, wow, I still have to have merit to do something. No one really cares if I think my stuff doesn't stink. All of that, it was something I wouldn't trade. And you know, it's kind of like the rest of your life goes. You don't necessarily want hardship, but then once you survive it or get through it, you realize, wow, that was super beneficial. I'm not dead. I survived it. I There was some gloomy days. The sun wasn't out. But guess what?
Yep.
It's going to shine through at some point. So,
and it did.
It did. Yeah.
So how does that freshman at Yale who gets beat up, who learns all that he's missing out on and learns how much he has to grow, how does that guy get on a path to begin his climb up the NFL elevator?
I think I really just wanted to be a part. You know, I got there and I was like 100. I was the lightest dude on the team. I was about 150 pounds, or I think I might have weighed in 143 or something crazy.
Wide receiver, right?
Yeah. And I was the smallest dude on the team. And I didn't like, you know, I my ambition had told me I was better than that. And, you know, I'd learned at a young age that the power of will and kind of fearlessness, where sometimes you can get the best out of yourself if you just go after something. And even if you don't achieve exactly what you think you're trying to achieve, you get the best out of yourself. So I end up like working out like crazy. Our strength coach was named Steven Plisk, and he had some drink that had like 10,000 calories, and we called it Pliskade. And I would drink that. I'd drink protein shakes with like right before I'd go to sleep, because I understood the science and my metabolism was out of control. So, and then worked out like twice a day, and I got up, I gained like 20 pounds by the time it was April, and started to get a little more footing on the football team a little bit, and definitely earned some respect, found some friends. And then that whole process, that microcosm of senior year of high school to freshman year of college to sophomore year, kind of reoccurred over and over for the rest of my career, where you feel good. Things are looking promising. Oh, wow, you just got humbled. Okay, you got to climb back up. Okay, things are getting good again. Oh, you got comfortable. Oh, you're back down, you know? And I think that it's kind of the lessons you learn. One of the reasons I like football so much, that's the lesson you learn every game, every series. Like, oh, man, it's first and 10. We just crushed it on a 9-yard run. Second one, oh, TFL, it's third and 4. Okay, we threw a pick, but there was a DPI. So we just, like, you know, like, it's, I wouldn't say it's one thing. I think it's the same thing happening over and over, and just kind of learning that blips are okay. You can use them towards your advantage. And that tough-mindedness of not, the one thing I won't ever do is say that I'm not strong enough to handle something. That my competitiveness really comes out there. So if something happens, my mind immediately goes to all those things. And you're like, you know what? If anybody can handle this, I can. I'm tough enough. And, you know, that's the story. It's not any great thing, or it's not all roses.
But your story, your life story unfolds before yourself every Sunday. You get to watch your life story unfold every Sunday in a 3-hour time window, right? The rise up, the setbacks, the comebacks, the games become microcosms of life.
And then there's an outcome, and you can feel a certain way for a couple hours, but then all of it doesn't matter because there's another game. Just kind of like, you know, I can feel great about becoming a head coach, but is that my goal, is just to become one? No. Everyone wants to congratulate me. That's cool. But then guess what? There will be hardships that I have to hold myself, and everyone will hold me accountable for. But what life has taught me is that I'm tough enough, that's where people can really thrive, is if you can push through adversity. And, you know, that's my plan.
So what is the goal now that you're head coach, and now that you don't really care too much about the congratulations that me and others have offered you, and you're settled into the office chair with the clouds in the background and the clouds of life? What is the goal as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Mike.
I mean, Adam, you want to get introspective? We can go there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What's interesting is I think I could have forecasted this, but to try to put it into words, immediately when I got here to Miami and now I am the head coach, there's a lot of I in your story where you're like, I want to get to this point, right? And then you're thinking goal orientation is through, okay, your career progression or whatever. And then you get here, and then it was really fast, really smooth, just a complete transition where you're like, oh, wow, my job is to – I've said it to a ton of people within the building. My job is to serve everyone else. You're the head coach now, but really all that anoints you is some power to help everyone else in the building and the organization, the fan base. So it's like a quick transition where now my goals are to best, you know, I'm awarded, you know, some authority. And really, what is that authority for? It's to empower all the other people that you work with so they can do their job the best, whether it's player, coach, or staff member, it doesn't matter. And then everyone working together, you can achieve a common goal. So the transfer was weird. I kind of thought it in that scope, but living it, the goals have nothing to do with myself really anymore, which is interesting, but very true.
But in a way, hasn't your job always been to serve others in whatever job you've done, even though it wasn't as a head coach?
Yeah, it's just, I guess there's it is truly, because you to do your job well, then things progress. It's when there's a finality, like, oh, you think about this when you're 18, I want to be a head coach. Then you get to that spot.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, you're not thinking about, yeah, it's always the task at hand. It's the pride in what you're doing and not thinking about the next step that gets you the next step. It's irony at its finest, which is what life is full of. Well, then once you get to that step that you've been chasing, now it's just exclusively all the time. Oh, well, you're working this whole time to be able to make a difference in a broader scope, to take all these years and life lessons, stuff that I was learning when I was behind the rope, watching you in front of the rope, whether it was I'm the guy that knows Rocky Mountain News and Denver Post.
Damn, you know, that's unbelievable, right? Yeah. That's incredible.
I have a vivid memory in Greeley, Colorado. I don't know how old I was, but I remember, like, what it was, the Rocky Mountain News that was the midfold, like a book.
That's right.
And I remember like maybe it was the Anthony Miller years or the Mike Pritchard or something. But like, I remember a free agent acquisition that was firing me up. I think it was pre Mike Shanahan. And I remember opening it up and be like, oh, he knows what's up, because you were the guy that was always on it. Like you had the deal, you know, it was the same work ethic that it's really awesome to see you do your job now, because you've done your job the same way. Which is kind of, I can draw a parallel in terms of I've just worked hard and then,
it's all the same. It's all the same, whether you're doing a coaching job or a reporting job, right? You've always done that. I've done that. And here we are meeting up again with loftier titles and larger stakes.
We're having a conversation and there's some person somewhere, at least one, that's listening to it for their enjoyment.
Well,
at least one.
At least one.
There's many of them. You're a big deal.
I don't know about that. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained. or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Adam. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any eight-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature eight-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be.
I don't know about it. You know what I remember? I remember being at Monday Night Football and talking to you, and you said something to me about, I think you said your wife wanted to read my book or did read my book or wanted to, and I sent you the book.
That's right, with an autographed signature.
An autographed signature, and that would have been 4 or 5 years ago.
It was.
So all these things, that the Denver group that you're talking about, though, those were some of your formative years before you formed more at Yale.
Ooh, that was good right there.
No, it's true. And those are my formative years. I tell everybody, I went to Michigan. I went to Northwestern Graduate School. I got my master's from the Denver Broncos. I got my master's in football from the Broncos because to be around all those people, all those different personalities, all the things that I learned that you can and can't do for 16 years that I was there. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable. And I think back to the collection of people that we were around.
Yeah.
Right. Christian McCaffrey's a little boy running around the football field. Mike McDaniel's a ball boy. Mm-hmm. Kyle Shanahan's holding cords. Rick Smith is a quality control coach.
Oh, yeah.
Shannon Sharpe's a tight end. Mark Schlereth's an offensive lineman. Great people.
No, and the way you conduct business, the way that you handle your sphere and your scope currently, I've always thought there's no doubt that that was shit. There was a professionalism that was assumed, required in that era. You know, Mike Shanahan, when he got there, was super intense, and like there was a way to conduct business if you wanted to do business. And I think it's interesting. You said when you said masters, I was like, most definitely. You've had a footing and a great career in this scope for a long time. And there's a reason. And on top of that, I sometimes think, does this dude ever sleep? This guy is, you must be attached to your, that you're always on it. When do you vacation?
I have not taken a vacation in a very, very long time, unfortunately.
No, let's put that to print. When's the last time you've taken a vacation?
I honestly couldn't tell you. And it's not because I don't want to, but my wife doesn't like to fly because of the fact that she lost her husband on 9/11. And we have 5 dogs at home. My wife is never going to put them in a kennel. And when I go on Instagram or Twitter and I see post-season people traveling around, and we have common friends and they're in San Diego or Cabo or whatever it may be, right? I'm going, man, what I would give to go to one of those places for 3, 4, 5 days and detach from my phone and step away. And I never do it. Never.
But you don't. You like to dream of it, but you have the means, but you choose not to because there's some sort of a, like you don't want to be the guy that you don't want to have something break and then you're not being, if there's a responsibility, maybe, I don't know.
No, but it's not that anymore. It's not that anymore. Like, I think maybe that might have been it at some point, but now it's really, it's more, honestly, it's my wife. Like, she's not going to go, and it's unfair of me after I've been gone every week during the year and you dedicate your life to this to say, okay, I know I've been gone every week and now I'm leaving again. Like, see, I'm going to go to Cabo. I'm going to go to San Diego for a few. Like, I was just gone. I was just at the Super Bowl for a week. I was at the Pro Bowl for a weekend. I was at Monday Night Football for 17 straight weeks. It's not right to her to leave her alone. She's a type 1 diabetic. She's got the kids at home, you know, the five. So I'm not going. I'm not going. That's the way to, that's my life. That's what I chose. It's not a complaint. Would I love to go away like you're talking about? 100%.
I still don't buy it. I'd love that. I still don't buy it. I think you're.
Why not?
I think you're a workaholic at the highest level, and I really respect it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but but if I could get away, I would get away. And I, when I did get away, I probably would be checking in and making phone calls on the beach. That's true. Okay.
Yep.
That I will give you. You brought up the Shanahans. How indebted are you to Mike and Kyle for the job that you have today and the road that you've traveled in the NFL?
I mean, everything. Literally everything. It's weird to try to put words to it because what does the house look like if there's no foundation?
Mm-hmm. There's no house.
I mean, where are the walls? I don't know. Like I don't know. So it's that's the hardest thing to even put words to because, you know, it's opportunity for one. But it's also when you're learning something in those critical formative years, it inspires me with, I mean, when I got to Miami and there was existing coaches here, every day that I'm working with the coaching staff and the personnel department, it's a continual inspiration because I don't know. I couldn't sit here and say, yeah, I'm maybe a talented mind, but when you look at something from a scope that's sound and that's your starting point and there's a non-negotiable is work ethic, a non-negotiable is combing every detail and having responsibility for your information that you give to the players. To just the dedication, the innovation, all that stuff. It's a big deal when you're formulating what you even see a coach being. I know for me, I remember seeing Mike Shanahan, it goes all the way back to this, seeing a 5'9" guy be a head coach. I knew that was different. And at the time, I'm sure there was people that said this, that, or the other, because he didn't look, you know, I get a lot of that now and I don't even blink because I saw that when I was like 10 or 12 or whatever. And all of those things with how I conduct myself every day and my vision in football and what allows me to impact others and stuff, that's all tied to those men that I think the Dolphins might have been the first the Dolphins are the first people to hire me.
Oh, I know you.
Other than Kyle Shanahan.
Yep, I thought yep.
That since Denny Green in 2009. So you know, Kyle and Mike in Washington, but Kyle is the offensive coordinator. Where would I be without that? I don't know. You know, that's what's unique about that. And it's there'll always be a special tie. I mean, I worked 14 years with Kyle.
Wow. And what's the biggest thing you learned from him?
Again, that's it's hard to like say the biggest thing, because it doesn't necessarily do it justice. But no, it's kind of shaped really how I view everything football related. So as that relates to my job, everything football related.
You know, what's interesting as I think about it, and I remember talking to Mike and Kyle about their staffs all along, and you were always a part of it, and they always had this high regard for you. But I also think back in the day, and please take this the right way, they felt like you had to grow up and mature and kind of evolve into the person you are today, that there was always this tremendous talent and this great mind, but he had to be kind of reined in. Is that fair to think of?
Definitely.
That's how I think of it back in the day. Like every time I talked to him, who's going with you? Oh, Bobby Turner's coming, Mike McDaniel's guy. Like, it was always the same people that they loved and trusted and respected, but they needed to see you kind of grow up and become the guy that you have.
No, and that's not something that's insulting. I own that. That's a piece that I'm very proud of. You know, when you think of it from you can take the Washington staff when we're all in our 20s, right?
Unbelievable staff, by the way.
Kyle's dad is Mike Shanahan. Sean McVay's dad and grandfather, incredibly successful. Matt LaFleur's dad was a college coach. What I was finding out, they were saying it to me and I didn't figure it out, like you didn't grow up or whatever. And then when I'd reflect on it, I'm like, yeah, I grew up with no pattern to follow. It's one of the reasons I am a unique, whatever, you know, every time people say I look different, it doesn't rattle me at all. I'm proud of that because I didn't pattern myself after anything.
Mm-hmm.
In lieu of that, when you are constantly trying to set your own trend, you're going to hit some hiccups. You're going to look at things probably without the right scope or perspective. You're going to render yourself vulnerable to, you know, being in hindsight dumb or childish or immature. There was lessons that I had to learn as a man. And it didn't bother me because that's part of my uniqueness too, my own. But you also, there's a cost, and the cost is like, hey, yeah, I didn't. There was some professionalism that I didn't model myself off after. I had to go through, you know, just different things in life to kind of shape. I needed that, you know, I probably needed when I was 14 or I was getting hooping earrings. I needed a dad to say, what are you doing? You're not doing that. Go sit your butt in your room. You're dumb. And I didn't, you know, I didn't really ever, my mom empowered me, but she was also like, you know, she wasn't trying to be my dad. And I was kind of like I had my own reins as a young guy. And it took me a little while to figure out, you know, that adult thing.
Well, we all come at it at different times and different paths. And as you're telling that, you didn't have an example, right? Like I didn't have anybody in the sports field that I looked at as an example. And I go back to the time that we were in Denver at various stages in our life. And I got to see, oh, wow. So that's how you work. That's how you succeed in this industry. That's what being a professional is. That's what this is about. Like my grandfather always wanted me to go into the family business, a five and dime type sales type business. Mm-hmm. My parents worked in the stores.
Right.
Never really, it didn't interest me, but I had to learn something entirely new, all on my own, from different people showing me the way.
Exactly.
Like the Shanahans.
No, and that's, you know, quite honestly, it's that broad. It's that intertwined, you know. That's why it's hard for me to like qualify like, oh yeah, they were this. I mean, they were part of everything. And I think that's one of the things in talking to Kyle and Mike after I got the job, I think that was an unintended thing. I don't want to speak for them, but I could hear in their voice that they're like, wow, I'm feeling a sense of pride. Like,
yeah,
that I didn't really think about. You know,
well, in a way, they help raise you.
Yeah. No. And I mean, that was my
shepherd. They shepherd you. They shepherded. Shepherd. They shepherded you along.
Yeah. Shepherd. Shepherded.
They teach you that word at Yale, Mike?
You know, they taught me a lot of words. they made me read a bunch of stuff. So I'm not sure if that was there. Centennial or what, Cherry Creek School District. One of the two.
Well, you know, I said this to your great assistant, Ann Nolan, there. Mm-hmm. Has the NFL ever produced a head coach from Yale? Have we ever seen a head coach from Yale in the NFL? I don't know that we have.
Was Dick LeBeau a head coach or?
Yeah, he was. No. I don't think he ever became a head coach. No, but Hall of Fame defensive back.
No, I wish I had someone with access to the internet machine. I can't believe I said Dick LeBeau.
Dick Geron.
Dick Geron, yeah.
Dick Geron.
Nah, just do a overlap, just like a voiceover. And
just say, no. Dick Geron. Say it a few times.
I'll say Dick, and you'll go, Geron.
Geron.
Geron. Dick Geron. That's what I was. That's what I thought I was saying, actually, because I was picturing Dick Geron.
So you thought of Dick LeBeau, and I thought of Dick Geron before you thought of Dick Geron. Dick Geron never won a Super Bowl, but he was a head coach.
I feel like it was the second person, ironically, I think it was the second person from Smoky Hill High School to go to Yale. So there's a little, and guess what my high school number was? Yep, 2.
There is a little signature.
The Miami Dolphins could shepherd me.
Let's give you a goal, aside from serving others, to become the first person from Smoky Hill, the first person from Yale, to go on to coach an NFL team and lead it to a Super Bowl title.
And you know what's funny? This is how deep it is. When you say that, the first, all I can think about is the Miami Dolphins fan base has not won a playoff game in 22 years. They are so loyal. What that would mean to them. That's where there's a transition where you realize, oh wow, there's so many people you can touch, and it doesn't even, it's not like I'm thinking, wow, I'd have a cool, I'm like, wow.
And let me say this for any Dolphin fan who's listening to this, and I've got one close friend who's very successful, and he's going to be listening to this. I'm not even going to say anything to him. He is as diehard a Dolphin fan as I know. And when I speak to him on a Monday after his team, the team you now coach, loses, he is despondent in a basket case. And when you say what it would mean to the Miami Dolphin fan base, I think of my friend Mark, who's listening to this right now, and I think of all the other people, the joy that you could bring to his and others' lives is immeasurable, immeasurable.
That isn't lost on me for a second, because I can remember as just growing up, the feeling that was visceral of, I mean, I remember when Rocket Ishmael returned to kick.
I was at that game. Again,
right?
Against CU, and it was called back for the flag.
And I remember the moment. I remember, you know, the first Super Bowl I can remember, and just being in the tank with the Broncos versus the 49ers, and it ruining my week. That's what you can't, and I haven't. I've made sure of that feeling. I do not lose for a second. So the responsibility, the service, that doesn't stray from me for an inch for a second, because that I can remember and I know exactly. I can identify with it, and I know there's plenty of people out there that feel the same way about the Dolphins. And you don't know what you're able to accomplish with a team. It takes so many people to do their jobs. But I will say this, I know there won't be, I'll leave everything out there, every ounce of mind, body, and spirit to try to make sure that I can do my part in leading a team to achieve that. And I'll be able to sleep at night because I know I'll leave it all out there. And I think that's an important thing, from the ground up, the way I've been raised in the game of football. I know that's the, with everything that goes on, that's the only way that you can be at peace, win, lose, or draw, is if you leave it all out there on the field, so to speak.
Well, it's an honor to have been around you as you've been raised in the game of football and to watch your steps all along the way. And I will look forward to seeing the next steps in the journey, which hopefully will include some of the aforementioned accomplishments that we've talked about. I'm happy for you and I'm proud of you personally. I am too.
That is so cool to hear. And there's a, like I said, the idea of football through the lens of print from reporting, from covering that idea for us to be having this conversation. Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Because you're the first guy. That was the standard for, I thought, how people were going to conduct business, which I will say, I will be at Indianapolis next week.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of media members there.
Yeah.
And not everyone conducts themselves in the same manner. I think there would be a lot of people that would attest to that.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I can only speak to how I try to do my job. And we've known each other a very long time. And I appreciate you taking the time today to join me on this little journey that we've been on together, that we'll continue to go on together.
That's right. And there will be sun and clouds. Everyone enjoy it.
Mike, you're the man. I appreciate it.
Pageant wave.
Take care. And there is Mike McDaniel, the new head coach of the Miami Dolphins. And he certainly doesn't talk or think or act like any other head coach that I know. And we are rooting for him to succeed in Miami. He obviously approaches the game in a different way. He obviously is very thoughtful and very intelligent, as you can tell. And we will be rooting for him from afar and hope that it works out well for Mike in Miami.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From Mike McDaniel to the former Minnesota Vikings general manager, Rick Spielman. Hello there, Rick. How are we doing?
Doing great. So
yeah,
doing a lot of this stuff. So it's been fun.
So what have you found exciting about doing the media stuff, the podcasts that you've done?
The exciting thing that I really enjoyed was that's why I asked you about getting prepared. I love going to do all the preparation. I try to look at it differently than anyone else would look at it. I try to give a different perspective on taking you inside the room and actually what the discussions are, the analytics side of things, Dallas Cowboys, Dallas and San Fran game. So the only thing I know, the one thing I noticed and I brought up in some of these podcasts was I'm sitting there and listening, but the one thing that Kyle Shanahan did a phenomenal job at was during the fourth quarter, Garoppolo never snapped the ball up until less than 5 seconds is when he would snap the ball, which eliminated any extra time that Dallas would have in that fourth quarter to get the ball back. Now you take away the incomplete pass, interception that Garoppolo threw, Dallas went and had a chance and had enough time to get back in. So to me, that was a great game management standpoint, because I'm watching it. The only thing I'm watching is when they're snapping the ball with how much time's left on the play clock. I thought that was fascinating. They knew that.
How did you detect that trend? Like, how did you see that? When did it occur to you as you were reviewing the film of that game?
I didn't even review the film. I was just watching sitting there on my couch. But the one thing that I know, because some people even talked about doing some color, is I've done so many, every game that I've done, I have written what happened each play, whether it was a clock management decision, a game management decision, a player did this or that. So I did that in practices. Every day I go out and stand behind the defense, and I wrote a note on every play on what I was seeing. So that way, when I went and watched the tape, that I already had kind of what my initial reaction was, and then going back and reviewing it afterwards. So I've been doing that forever. You know, and I've had probably close to 100 pages of game notes over the last 16 years on what happened and how you would do it differently when you use your timeout, not use your timeout, coming up with different game type scenarios and how it actually played out and would you do it differently this way. But I've always done that with everything. I mean, I probably every year when I met with the ownership group, I probably put together, I don't want to call it a diary, but a 200 page booklet on every aspect of the organization.
Wow.
And what we did well, what we didn't do well. You know, I talked on the 33rd team with Tannenbaum yesterday on mental health and how we handled all the mental health and how we implemented all these professionals. So in our mental health program, because we had to deal with Everson this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was, there had to be a lot going on there at that time.
There's always a lot going on.
Right.
So, but just sitting there and just, you know, looking and the, you know, because I know there's going to be some opportunities and I don't know if I'm, you know, want to do that or just kind of, you know, I've had four different people call me on, not even teams, call me on consulting roles, doing different things.
See, that's a fun thing to do there, Rick, because I think that that keeps you involved, but it doesn't keep you up at night.
Right. Or getting that 2 a.m. phone call or that 3 a.m. phone call or that 4 a.m. phone call. And when your heart drops every time you get those calls.
How often does that happen?
Not often, you know, maybe, hopefully never during the year, but there's always, you know, one or two that you may get. And that now you kind of hold your breath during this time of year because the players are away from the facility.
Right.
So that's when it usually starts to happen.
You mentioned that you would prepare a book at the end of the year to present to ownership every year on what the team did and didn't need to do and things you
noticed. Well, it was on every aspect of the organization.
Okay. Every aspect of it. Had you prepared that book this year before they let you go?
It was in the process. I have pretty much predominantly it done.
So did they ever get to see that?
No.
And what would be the takeaway if I were to scroll through that and see some of your observations about the 2021 Minnesota Vikings?
One or two play every game made a whole difference in the season. How many games? I think 12 that we were in on the last drive. You know, going back to Cincinnati when Cook fumbled in overtime in our opener to missing a 37-yard field goal at Arizona the next week, to winning in overtime in Carolina, to losing in overtime to Baltimore, to having a lead with a minute and 30-some seconds left to go in the Detroit game up in Detroit and letting them go 95 yards or whatever the hell they went to beat us at. I mean, it was a very bizarre world. You expect a couple of those games, but when there were 12 out of the 17 you played, that was even the Thursday night game against Pittsburgh, where you're up 29 to whatever, zero, and it comes down to the last play of the game in the end zone, and Harrison Smith breaks up the pass.
You ever had a season like that, Rick?
No, not that many games that close.
And because these games are so close in the end, and because so many of them don't go your way, in the end, you wind up losing your job, which I think surprised some people. What was your reaction when you got called in and were informed that the Wilfs were letting you go?
You know, I kind of had the ability to reflect back, and I have nothing but love and admiration for that organization and to have an incredible career for 16 years there. And it goes beyond the wins and losses. It goes beyond the job. It comes down to the relationship that you have with the people in the building, not only on the football side, but the business side as well. And, you know, just to sit back and how many funerals have you gone to? How many weddings have you gone to? How your kids grew up with a lot of those other people in the building's kids. You know, it's a family, and the Wilf ownership is, I've never experienced anything like that from a standpoint of working with such great people. And, you know, it even told me more about the Wilf family that after I was let go, Mark had called me and I've talked to him twice since then, just checking. He checked up on me, and that just tells you that even though I'm not there anymore, I know how important the relationships are in the people. I mean, they're basically your family, because that's who you spend more time with, people in that building, than when you do with your own family, which is, you know, unfortunate, but that's part of the business. That's what you sign up for.
Have you had any contact with the new head coach, Kevin O'Connell, or their new GM, no. Crazy Adolfo Mensa? Nothing.
No, I'm too busy doing podcasts.
As we step back and look at this, Rick, now, if you were still the GM of the Minnesota Vikings, what do you think you would be attacking here in the week of the combine and going into free agency?
You know, we always had a plan in place going into free agency and going to the combine. I think the critical piece is, with the new head coach coming in and the new staff coming in, you have to get in alignment with them on what they see from a personnel standpoint on your roster. You have to understand they may have a whole new set of eyes on what needs need to be filled going into next year. So this whole time, you know, I know probably every team in the NFL over the past 2 weeks have been in these type of personnel meetings, whether it's draft meetings and planning for free agency, salary cap meetings. I know, you know, there's going to be some decisions that have to be made in Minnesota from a cap standpoint that are going to be critical decisions. But me not being in those meetings and listening what the new coaching staff feels they need or what they want to do and how they're going to move that the Minnesota Vikings organization forward, that's hard to determine. But I know every team is going through that same process this time of year.
What is the biggest, well, I guess the biggest decision they have to make in regards to their quarterback, Kirk Cousins? There's a $45 million cap figure. Putting on your role now as a member of the media, as an analyst, as somebody who knows that organization, how do you envision that shaking out? What would you expect to happen there?
I believe it's going to come down to the meetings they have with, you know, Kevin O'Connell. And I know he's worked with Kurt, I believe, back in the past when he was with the Washington Commanders now. Yes. So there's some type of relationship there. But they have to make a decision, because there's no question about Kirk's ability and what he's done on the field. I mean, we didn't win as many games. You know, when we went back through that process and we lost to the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC Championship game, and Case Keenan had a phenomenal year that year. And we had, I believe, the number one rated defense at the time. Is to add Kirk Cousins into that and bring back everybody that we were able to bring back, would that get us over that hump? Because twice in my career with the Minnesota Vikings, we were in the NFC Championship game. We lost a heartbreaker down to New Orleans. I remember down when Brett Favre was our quarterback, and he threw the interception on the last play, and we had a penalty before that play that got us out of field goal range. So, you know, and then, so those are the decisions that when you're sitting in those meetings with your coaches, you have to decide, and they're going to have to decide, because there's no question that Kirk can produce in this league. But are you asking yourself, why hasn't he had the same success in the win and loss column as he has in the stat column? And if you look at our season this year, some of those games he had actually, I thought, brought us back and put us in position to win some of those games. But you have to go back and analyze each of those games and make a decision on how you're going to move forward. Are you going to extend them? Are you going to let them play out this year, even though it's a big cap hit? But I also know the cap is also increasing this year. Mm-hmm. And or if you're not and you're only going to play it out, or you potentially could trade him. And then, but you better have a trigger man, a quarterback in place, or what is the plan if Kirk Cousins is not there either this year, next year, or going forward?
And what would that be in your mind, knowing that organization as well as you do?
Well, that's hard for me to say just because I don't know how the new regime feels, you know.
But you know Kellen Mond and the progress he did or didn't make his rookie year. You drafted him. Is he somebody that has the chance to succeed Kirk Cousins one day if that's what the organization determines?
Well, I think you find out about all these quarterbacks. You can anticipate that. You do all your research and everything you can to make those decisions. Is this guy going to be the next guy or not? But until they actually get out there and play, you're not going to know. I mean, you can look at all the analytical things. You can look at, hey, this guy had a great, year down at Texas A&M. You know, I remember watching him and how he performed against Florida, and that was one of his big games. And then he continued to ascend through this pre-draft process, at the Senior Bowl, where he played very well at the Senior Bowl, had some great workouts. We always had our coaches heavily involved in our decision process. Mm-hmm. Because we felt that we did not want to bring a player in if the coach did not want him there. So we had a lot of discussions and always felt that it was extremely important to come together as a group and make the best decision for the Minnesota Vikings. And if people agreed or disagreed as we went through that process, once we made that decision, everybody had to be on board to make that player as successful as we can. So I think Kellen has a lot of upside, a lot of potential. But until they actually get out there and play, yeah. I don't think you're going to know what you truly have.
You brought up that NFC Championship game loss in New Orleans. Of all the losses that you endured in Minnesota, there are plenty of wins, but of all the losses that you endured, is that the one that stays with you the most of any
that,
of them?
That one kind of will never, just like the Minneapolis Miracle will never go away. You go from that extreme in New Orleans and then, playing the exact same team in your stadium and winning the way you won in that Minneapolis Miracle. So those were, there's so many fond memories and even though you hate the losses and how hard those can hurt sometime, those are things that you can't experience anywhere else but in the NFL and on those game days.
But it's fair to say that the single most exhilarating win and the single most disappointing loss both came against the New Orleans Saints with the Minneapolis Miracle and the Favre interception.
Yes, I would say those are the two things that were as extreme as you can potentially get in the NFL, at least in my opinion.
Hey, Rick, I appreciate taking some time. Lots of luck in your next role, continuing to do all these podcasts. I hope you didn't overly prepare for a podcast where I kept you for 20 minutes or so and you did 3 hours of preparation for a 20 minute podcast.
You didn't give me anything. We just said, hey, we're just going to sit there and talk. I didn't have anything to prepare for. So I kind of went off the top of my head, but I appreciate it and really appreciate you having me on today.
Thank you, Rick. Lots of luck with everything.
Thank you.
And there is the former Minnesota Vikings general manager, Rick Spielman. We wish him well in the next chapter of his life. And with that, we are off to Indianapolis for this week's Combine. I'm proud to say that I've been going to the Combine since the early 1990s. And it used to be that I would go with truly 7 or 8 other reporters. We would stand around the lobby of the Holiday Inn Crown Plaza in Indianapolis and wait for players to interview, college prospects, wait for coaches to show up. And I can tell you some of those writers, Rick Goslin, John McClain, Peter King, Clark Judge. Those are some of the writers I remember, Dan Pompey. There were not many of us. And it has gone from literally 8, 9, 10 reporters in attendance at the Combine to probably a couple of thousand reporters this year. And I remember in the early days being at the Combine, and I always remember sitting down with Kevin Hardy, who at the time was a linebacker from Illinois, and he was complaining to us reporters about the psychological testing that he had to go through. And there was one complicated test from the New York Giants in which we asked him, what was the weirdest question that you were asked? And he said, do you like tall women? And we said, well, what'd you answer? And he said, I crossed off the T and wrote, I like all women. And I thought that was a very good answer from Kevin Hardy. Showed that he's quick on his feet, very creative, very intelligent, very funny. It was an answer I always remember. But that was a time, a simpler time at the Combine. I don't mean to long for yesteryear and the days of old and talk about how good it was back in the good old days. But those were the good old days when a group of us had the Combine essentially to ourselves. It is no longer that way. It is the masses descending upon Indianapolis. Most everybody in the football universe is there this week. Every coaching staff, mostly, every front office, every agent, all the college players, everyone in the media. It's like a football convention in Indianapolis in the first week of March. And so with that, we are off to Indianapolis to go attend this year's Combine, which would be, I guess, my 30th or so Combine, which is crazy to think about as well. But we were off to the Combine for about the 30th time and going since about 1992. All right, before I let you go, I want to quickly tell you about the First Draft podcast with ESPN experts Mel Kiper Jr., Todd McShay, and Field Yates. This podcast is keeping tabs on the latest in the NFL draft and is now twice a week, every Monday and Thursday. Also, check out Monday's show on YouTube as well. All right, I want to thank my guest today, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Mike McDaniel, the former general manager of the Minnesota Vikings, Rick Spielman, my great producer, Christina Buswell, her assistant, Sarah Abbott, and you, the listener, for tuning into another Adam Schefter podcast. Please join us again next week when we are scheduled to be joined by the free agent-to-be quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky, who is expected to leave Buffalo to find a starting quarterback job somewhere else. Until then, have a great week. Be well. And stay safe.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.